Welcome to DeFi Expectations. Today we have on Dr. Stanislav Tomas, a Lithuanian attorney and activist who destroyed a plaque honoring a Nazi collaborator in Lithuania and has created a political protest NFT to commemorate the occasion. How are you doing today?
Fine, great. Thanks for inviting me. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming. This is a pretty neat one. I'm excited for this.
Of course, we're completely happy to have you. And can you tell us a little bit about the history of Lithuania and why you felt the need to destroy this plaque and maybe why the plaque was there in the first place?
As you might know, Lithuania is a new country. It appeared like 20 years ago. It got independence from the Soviet Union, and therefore for Lithuanians, for many ethnic Lithuanians, it is quite important to underline that, they were fighting against the Soviet Union. From my perspective, this is a great mistake of the Lithuanian government and in general of ethnic Lithuanians. They have erected over 100 monuments to Nazis because, Nazis were fighting against the Soviet Union. But, still, this is not a justification for erection of this kind of monuments. And I am multi-ethnic, so I am partly Jewish. So it was a kind of insulting for me to see all those monuments in the streets. There are streets given names of the Nazis, schools for, high schools that are named in order to glorify Nazis. Many Nazis, over 100 Nazis have gotten Knight Cross within the last 30 years. So at the same time, when I smashed the plaque, I destroyed the monument to Jonas Noreika. Jonas Noreika was a Nazi warlord who actually ordered murdering over 14,000 Jews during the World War II. And he also signed an application to the government of Lithuania in 1941, asking to provide him over 1 million rubles in order to establish a death camp. And he also explains in his application form that he needs this money, he needs the death camp, because the Jews who work in the death camp, the slaves, they would produce goods and those goods could be sold. And, this is his business plan, to create a death camp. So obviously for such a person, there should be no monuments. And I also felt insulted by this monument. Basically I took this sledgehammer and I destroyed the monument. And then I was imprisoned. Well, I got a prison sentence for 3 months. And also the judgment of the Lithuanian courts ordered the arrest of all my bank accounts everywhere in the European Union. So in order to protect my savings from, being arrested, the court decided that my bank accounts should be closed in the European Union and the money used to rebuild the monument. By the way, the monument was rebuilt on the 10th day after its destruction. And the prime minister of Lithuania, the president of Lithuania, the mayor of Lithuania, and even the minister of foreign affairs of Lithuania, all of them condemned me. And they, they underlined that the monument should be restored. And it was restored, actually. So in order to protect my money, I transferred everything in cryptocurrency because, I previewed that I have like 24 hours, maybe 48 hours. So it was very urgent. It was scary, actually. It was risky, but finally I profited from that. Since then I am, in cryptocurrency. Since then I have no choice but to keep my savings in cryptocurrency. And that's how, I came to the idea to upload it on blockchain, the very video of destroying the plaque, because actually I saw many NFT art examples. And from my perspective, it was not sufficiently serious. Like, you know, many things in NFT were a kind of infantile from my perspective, and I wanted, you know, to add something like something more serious, something like a real challenge to the society. Because, you know, what I have did is a huge challenge to the Lithuanian society, because, you know, as you see, all the leaders of the of Lithuania, the president, prime minister, minister of foreign affairs, the judges, all of them think that those Nazis are worth to be glorified by the government. And all the media in Lithuania, the majority of journalists, all of them think that this is a good thing to glorify the Nazis because they were fighting the Soviet Union. And actually, you know, if you compare the Nazi regime and the Soviet regime, obviously Nazi regime was much more radical than the Soviet. Because, you know, if Soviets, they just were confiscating property of rich people, you know, they hated rich people, but they were not distinguishing rich people according to their race or ethnicity, while Nazis focused only on people who are not white enough. And well, from my perspective, it is much more dangerous for society. And we have good examples of surviving, you know, the Soviet regime, like, you know, Roman Abramovich, the richest Israeli citizen. His family was sent to the Soviet concentration camp, and they survived, and they were released after that. Well, obviously they were sanctioned by the Soviets because they were rich. But they were not sanctioned because they were Jewish. Obviously, many Jewish families were rich, but still, you know, this regime was not that terrible. It was absolutely possible to survive, to be released from the Soviet prisons. While in the Nazi scenario, there was no possibility to escape death. You go to the death camp, you work as a slave, and then they just kill you. So, you know, that was the idea. And this is terrible that some countries in Eastern Europe are glorifying Nazis that open. And it is also terrible that they are able to issue the orders to, you know, arrest property of anti-Nazi activists. You know, they are basically abusing the European system, the system of the European Union. But, you know, step by step, I think that in general, the society has only one scenario for development. Like, we are always moving towards more liberty, democracy, and, you know, human rights. And, you know, there are obstacles right now. You know, there are a kind of steps back, like in Lithuania, but in the longer term, there is only one scenario. You know, Nazis will be condemned, Holocaust will be recognized a huge crime everywhere, including Lithuania.
Absolutely. I mean, there's so many questions I have to that, and thank you for telling that story so well. To start, you know, there's a big discussion going on in crypto communities, and it was put very eloquently by Red Phone Crypto. He's from the land of crypto Twitter, is very eloquent in the way he describes things, but he talks about what's happening right now as a separation of money and state. And it's this idea that the state shouldn't have control to that degree over our money, over our assets. You know, they pretty much have us as slaves if they have our money. Just like in your situation, you did something that was correct, something that's admirable. And because of that, the state, you know, your government was able to come and seize your accounts. I think that that's awesome that you were able to have the wherewithal to turn to cryptocurrency. Were you able to protect all of your funds? And if so, did you diversify into Bitcoin, Ethereum? Do you want to speak to some of that a little bit?
Yeah, of course. You know, at that point, it was very scary for me because, you know, I was new to cryptocurrency, but I was it was impossible for me to open a bank account outside of the European Union because I was in the European Union at that moment. If I go to another European Union country, it will not work because, you know, they will be able to arrest my money automatically in another European Union country.
Yeah, I was sure that that was one of the ways that this works. So that's very interesting. That's something that I definitely was not aware of. That so they, with the European Union, they share the ability to monitor each other's bank accounts.
Yes, yes, in every country. So they have open bank accounts and there is no escape if you are in the European Union. And then, as I understand, right now it is a system that exists in the European Union, but obviously they have ambition to extend it to, you know, other countries outside of Europe and, you know, to cover as much as possible. So this scenario is potentially dangerous because, you know, obviously not all European countries are democratic. You know, there are countries that have centuries of democratic tradition, like France, for instance, and there are countries who never were democratic, like Lithuania, and they have this actually Soviet and Nazi culture that is still dominant. And in this situation, you cannot trust this system, and you need have a possibility, you know, to, you know, escape the system in general. There might be also problems with democratic countries, as I imagine. You know, you never know. Today it's Lithuania, tomorrow it may be another country, which is, you know, more respected in the West, that could, you know, take a step back, you know, on its, you know, a step back in its, you know, democratic tradition. So, So obviously I was diversifying. I started from Bitcoin, than Ethereum, and then many others. So actually, right now, at that point, because I remember that when I just invested in Bitcoin, it just stopped dropping down. it was like seeing. But you know, for me, it was much more pleasure to lose my money in a Bitcoin or in another cryptocurrency than give this money to establishment of the Nazi monument.
Oh, hell so, yeah. Yeah, you know. Absolutely.
How long ago did you first learn about crypto?
I heard about it, obviously, but I was not investing anything. I was just, you know, reading from time to time and, you know, it's... But the push for me was the legal action taken by the government against me. So, you know, that was the point where I understood that I don't have much time. Yes. So, yeah. And now I continue diversifying the portfolio. And in fact, it was a great success for me because I have acquired Bitcoin for a price that was much lower than it is today.
That's nice.
You bought a couple years ago, right? This was a couple years ago. So actually this must have worked out. I mean, I'm assuming probably when you first went in, there were some dips and some things going on with Bitcoin, but if you're still in now, you're doing really good. So this all actually kind of worked out in a way. You got introduced to Bitcoin. You escaped having your funds taken from you for something that you did in political protests. And you're a part of this transformative financial system that protects your money and is making you more of it, technically. So it kind of works out, I guess.
Yes, yes, absolutely. It looked like a miracle, and it is great. And also another step was introduction of this video of destroying the Nazi plaque as an NFT, because in general, I think that there is a huge potential for political action to be tokenized on blockchain in a manner similar to CryptoPunks. I understand that the CryptoPunks have artistic value and they are the first and they are algorithmic. But I would like to see more things that, you know, are really challenging to the society, like to the things that, you know, provoke the authorities in a, you know, more radical manner. So I believe that there is a huge, you know, direction for development of this kind of art. Because, you know, anyway, if this NFT succeeds, then there are 100 other Nazi monuments in Lithuania and also in other countries.
Gotta collect them all. Yeah, I'm all for this. So I another question I have kind of parallels some of the things that we deal with here, and I want to be careful, I guess, how I talk about it, because it's a little bit different, but it's kind of similar. You know, in America we don't have Nazi statues, monuments, or plaques in public view, but we do have a number of monuments to the South, the Confederacy, so on and so forth. Now, I'm not particular to that culture, and obviously we're not particular to Nazis either. The question that remains, though, and this is something that's happening, you know, in America, it's happening globally, is where do you draw the line? At what point does it become censorship? I mean, you could even look at cancel culture in America. You know, people say something that you don't like, and then suddenly they lose their sponsorship, they lose their career. I guess the question for me is, especially with you being an attorney, so you represent people on these matters, I would presume, and showing them where the law fits in to their point of view. Where do you draw the line, I guess, as to when something has become so offensive that it shouldn't be in public view, or that it demands this level of protest? At what point do you think that that's necessary?
I would say that there is a huge difference between America and Lithuania. You know, in America, you are free in America to criticize those monuments. You may say that you disagree with them. You may say that this a particular person was an owner of slaves, and you do not like him, and you may write a complaint, and there is a public discussion. In Lithuania, if you do that, you will be imprisoned, because there are already, I'm the fifth. We have four persons who were imprisoned in Lithuania for orally criticizing the Nazi monuments. So like three of them got prison sentence. One was deported. We had a Spanish lawyer who was criticizing Holocaust. First he was imprisoned, and then he got a ban to enter Lithuania, and he was deported from the country. We have another activist who wrote several articles criticizing Holocaust, and he was ordered to be closed in a mental hospital. So the court ordered his coercive psychiatric examination for the fact that he was writing articles criticizing Holocaust. And then he fled from Lithuania. But you know, there is no free speech like in America. In America, you have an open discussion. So until the point when you are allowed to talk and to criticize, I wouldn't say that it is like you are in a situation of no choice. But in Lithuania, you don't have a free speech. You don't have the right to criticize those monuments. And moreover, we had a legal proceedings for about 10 years. You know, we have a friend, Grant Gotchen, who was litigating for over 10 years in Lithuania to remove part of those monuments, and he lost everything. He invested a lot of money into the litigation, and the final decisions of all Lithuanian courts were that those Nazis, they are worth to be glorified because they were fighting the Soviet Union. But, you know, then Adolf Hitler was also, you know, fighting the Soviet Union. I wouldn't say that, you know, in you know, the slaves all owners were that dangerous to the society in general. in America, because yes, that's awful, and that's absolutely against human rights to own people and sell them and to, you know, torture them. But they didn't have an objective to kill all Black people, while the Nazis had, in fact, the objective of killing all people, first of all, Jews, and then all the people who are not white. Mm-hmm. So their danger and their cruelty was much more severe than what you see with the owners of slaves. However, yes, this is a problem. But in America, you are free to discuss, and then you have free elections, and you are able to change a lot of things through democratic procedures, which are not available in Lithuania. And, you know, in little Eastern European countries like Lithuania, where you actually do not have democratic traditions.
Yeah, that's helpful to know, because when you kind of understand it from that perception, it's like, well, if I could just write an article about how offensive this monument is and get thrown in jail, I might as well take a sledgehammer to it. You know what I mean? It's like go big or go home. I think maybe something that would be helpful to kind of understand too, when understanding the difference between kind of like what's happening over here in Lithuania. I was reading something, and it was I think it was here in Wikipedia somewhere, but I'm sure there's other news on it other places. But it was talking about how the state has a different perspective of this individual who has these plaques made for him, that they see him as a hero to Lithuania for certain reasons. And, you know, again, you can see some parallels with that in different countries and cultures, where someone is looked at as a hero, but they're looked at as a villain in others. But the interesting details, it said something about, actually it was on your OpenSea description. It said something about the prime minister's grandfather was a Nazi or something like that. Can you speak a little bit to like the internal corruption at play here?
Yes, of course. Basically, the great grandfather of the current minister of foreign affairs of Lithuania was a minister of infrastructure in the Nazi government in 1941. So, basically, he is exactly the person who signed the order to confiscate all the Jewish property. And he was, so the great grandfather signed the order to confiscate the Jewish property. And he also was the chief governor of the concentration camp, as well as of all the ghettos. And then obviously when his children come to power in Lithuania, because it is not, the first representative of this family who became a minister of foreign affairs. In fact, the Nazi minister, Vytautas Landsbergis, you know, the minister from 1941, he was one of the leaders of the Lithuanian independence movement in, 1990. Then his son became the first head of state of Lithuania, the first president of Lithuania in 1990. So that's why, you know, that Nazi family has a huge influence in Lithuania. And obviously they shaped the history in order to justify their grandfather.
I wanted to see real quick if we could screen share and blow up the whole image, watch the video real quick, and then I had a couple questions specifically about the video.
Надо вот остались. A national hero in Lithuania. Prisirašykite prie mano kanalo, o jeigu jums reikia parašyti skundą į Europos žmogaus teisų teismą arba aukščiau jungtinių tautų organizacijos teisinės institucijas, parašykite man e-mailą arba paskambinkite per WhatsApp.
So I wanted to know, what were you saying in those parts for anyone? I assume you're speaking Lithuanian there?
Yes. Yes. Actually, after destroying the monument, I called police myself and explained that I have destroyed the monument. And
that's what
the police
I was wondering.
Yeah.
That's what I kind of figured.
Yeah. And then the police officer asks, was it intentionally or by accident? And I explained to her that, yes, it was intentional. Then I was taken to the police station and I spent 56 hours. By law, they were allowed to keep me 48 hours, but they kept me 56 hours. Then I was released pending the trial and I escaped from Lithuania. Yeah. And then this video, I ended with an explanation that if you have breach of human rights, you have the right to appeal to the United Nations Human Rights Committee. And I say that I can help people with appeals to the United Nations. This case is under consideration by the United Nations right now.
Can you also, real quick, can you tell us exactly what the plaque says?
Oh, the plaque says that Jonas Noreiko, hero of Lithuania, was working in this building in 1946. So this is the building of the Lithuanian Academy of Sciences. And what is interesting is that there are no plaques of Lithuanian scientists in the building of the Lithuanian Academy of Sciences. And you know, the only explanation that I have for that is that all Lithuanian scientists were Jewish, actually. they just do not expose the names of the Jewish scientists, and they just, you know, they choose to put a plaque over Nazi warlord.
That's a pretty convenient thing to do.
Wow. Did this affect your ability to conduct law? Did they take away any of your ability to perform law in your country or in any country, or how does that work?
I do not have actually the right to continue practicing law in Lithuania, but you know, my primary activity is litigating before the United Nations. So you know, in a case of Lithuania, if you have this kind of political cases, you actually have no chances to win. So I was always looking at all the human rights cases in Lithuania as into like wasting money and energy for my clients, because you know, you have no chances to win. And the only instance where you have the right to win is the United Nations. So I was working for many years for you know, on this kind of appeals.
Okay, and where are you located now?
Well, yes. Well, I prefer not to disclose my location because, you know, well, if I am detained today or tomorrow, I have a plan what I will say to the police. But still, I prefer Lithuanians do not know exactly my location because, you know, that would facilitate them their attempts to arrest me.
Oh, of course.
Depending on where you are, do you think that they would have that ability?
Yeah, extradition laws, that's what I was kind of getting at.
Yeah, basically, I prefer not to be in the European Union because, you know, unfortunately, the European Union has this system where you can automatically arrest bank accounts, arrest anyone in another European country. This could be a good thing if all European countries had the same level of democracy and the same level of respect for human rights. But then when, you know, you have such huge differences, you know, in Germany, for instance, it is a crime to glorify Nazis. You know, in Austria, you may be imprisoned for 20 years for denial of Holocaust. And in Lithuania, denying of Holocaust is a national policy. This, when you have this kind of differences, this automatic arrest system, you know, seizure of bank accounts, automatic detention warrants, this is not something that, you know, should exist. I think that the European Union needs either to abandon this system of automatic arrests, or it should help its less developed countries like Lithuania to make a progress. And now they just accepted all the Eastern European countries irrespectfully, you know, regardlessly of their human rights situation.
Now, you said there's close to or over 100 different monuments and streets and things like that named after Nazis. What made you choose this particular one?
Yes, this particular one, because it is in front of the old Jewish cemetery. And right now, Lithuania is building a national conference center on the old Jewish cemetery. So there are 70,000 Jews that are buried in that cemetery. And they just decided to build a conference center on the bones. Well, of course, when they find bones, they throw them out. But still, you know, it is not the best solution. Well, obviously, the Jewish cemetery occupies a huge part of in the center of the town. But when Jews came to that place, that was not a center. And then, you know, Jews were buried in that cemetery for many centuries, actually. And there are 70,000 people buried over there. So this is absence of minimum respect for the Jewish community. But in general, it is, I wouldn't see this problem as only a problem of anti-Semitism, because it is against any person who is not white. If there were other non-white minority in Lithuania, Nazis would kill all of them, actually.
So are you a naturally born Lithuanian citizen, or if not, how did you end up there exactly in the first place?
Yeah, I am a Lithuanian. I am multi-ethnic, actually. So a part of my ancestry is ethnic Lithuanian, but another part of my ancestry is, you know, a kind of multiple, including Jewish.
In choosing this particular plaque, how long had you been considering destroying it, and how did it make you feel afterward? Because I know I really enjoy the process of destruction. It's very satisfying in a way. It's kind of like when you light something on fire. There's something very satisfying about destruction, just like there's something very satisfying about the creation of something. So how did you feel after doing this?
Well, I actually felt great because, you know, I was thinking about this for many years. When I was passing that street, I felt that, you know, obviously that guy, Jonas Noreika, he would kill me, entire family of mine, you know, all my friends, if he would have a possibility. He would keep me in as a slave, he would torture me, and he would be very happy to kill me. So if I were alive, you know, if I were living, you know, during the World War II, my moral duty would be to kill Jonas Noreika. So, you know, destroying his plaque is much easier than killing him. So, I felt released, actually. Yeah, I felt great.
Yeah, you look pretty happy in the video.
Yeah. Yeah, and then obviously my plan was to, you know, escape Lithuania because, well, I wouldn't say that I was sure that I would be, that I would get the prison sentence, because normally you do not get prison sentence for destroying property that is worth only $2,500. Mm-hmm. So this is inexpensive property. Then I don't have any criminal record. So, you know, that's the first criminal act that I have done during my entire life. Then, you know, I have PhD. Normally in this situation, you do not get a prison sentence. But then there was a huge pressure from the president of Lithuania, from the prime minister, minister of foreign affairs, you know, all the journalists who started to write a lot of a kind of insulting things about me. So yes, the judges were under that influence, and that's why they breached their normal practice. They sentenced me for for a real imprisonment.
I have a question about, without getting into too much detail, I know it's sensitive and all that, but do you feel like, or what support systems, I guess, have you kind of relied on since then? Like, do you have network connections just from being an attorney, family? Have you been able to kind of leverage that during this situation so that you're not like, you know, stuck with no place to go? Have you felt like you kind of have, do you feel like you have a good foundation to fight this battle against these people and win?
Yes, yes. I think that I have wonderful support. I think that life became more interesting. There is more adrenaline. And since I had to transfer all my savings into cryptocurrency, I earned much more than I could earn. So this is a wonderful development. In a longer term, I don't see how Lithuania can win this case before the United Nations. So we have an open case at the United Nations Human Rights Committee. And I actually do not understand how Lithuania hopes to prove that this person is worth to be glorified as a national hero. So I expect to win this case within the next 3 years, maybe 4 years. And then I get a judgment from the United Nations that says that, you know, I have not committed anything wrong. And with that judgment, I will be able to return to the European Union to have bank accounts, etc.
Now, let's say that happens, though. Couple questions. Do you prefer cryptocurrency now to the traditional banking system? That's the first question. And then the second question is, you had mentioned, or in some of the articles I'd read, apparently there are a lot of nationalists in Lithuania who would defend a monument like that, as gross as it is. Do you feel like if you came back, one, would you go back to the old financial system? And two, would you feel comfortable in your home again, now being known for that event, by both people who would support you and people who wouldn't?
I wouldn't. Well, right now, after being in crypto for over a year, I wouldn't return to, you know, to the classical bank system. I think it's fine to have certain money in a bank just, you know, for everyday transactions. But then I would still keep the majority of my funds in the cryptocurrency. You know, you never know what can happen. And in general, it is more profitable. And now I have this mania for searching for altcoins. So this is, you know, this is when you start, you cannot stop, actually.
So, yeah, I think we both know that feeling.
Yeah. And then, no, well, I wouldn't live in Lithuania. I do not imagine myself returning to Lithuania. I would be happy to live in the European Union because, you know, there are many wonderful, nice places. But in general, Lithuania, I wouldn't advise anyone to live in that country. It is boring. There is actually nothing. And it is absolutely anti-Semitic. If you are not totally white, you won't be happy in Lithuania. And you know, the color of your hair, it is not something that you can easily choose. So, you know,
yeah.
Would you consider yourself looking white, or is that more of like a caste system, like it might be in India?
If you are not white, it is quite difficult to make a career in Lithuania. Like, people do not accept you as equal. I was facing, you know, racism all my life. And, you know, I look white according to the Western European standards. So, but according to the Lithuanian standard, I am not white. Because I had some issues with the police in France, with police in Spain. So the Spanish and French police, they always identify me as white European. But in Lithuania, I am black. So they have a different classification of people. You will never feel yourself comfortable if you are not sufficiently white in Lithuania.
And why would you want to be in a place where that's the standard anyway? I mean, even if you are yes. that way, you know?
Yes. So I'm quite happy to be outside of Lithuania. But I miss the European Union. I studied in Paris. So I like France. I would return to France one day.
If you were to return to Lithuania, what do you think the consequences would be, even if you were, you know, cleared by the United Nations as having won that? Do you feel that you would have death threats or possibly be killed?
Oh, I have received several hundreds death threats from ethnic Lithuanians. So obviously it would be dangerous for me to walk in the streets. And I have written several complaints to the Lithuanian police due to those death threats. So the Lithuanian police answered me that those threats are not dangerous, despite the fact that there are several hundreds of them. So that's their approach. So obviously, Lithuania is not the best country for me. But in general, I like the European Union. The European Union is a great place.
I had another question about the plaque too. From what I saw, I did see, and like you said, that it had been restored within 9 days. Is that correct? But then Apparently within 3 months, it was removed again by the city?
Yes. No, it was replaced. Actually, what they have done, they have glued the plaque. So they glued the plaque and they put it back in 10 days. And then in 3 months, they replaced it by a new one, which is much nicer. And it has a bronze statue, you know, gotcha. On the top. So they made a legal operation. Now, if previously the owner of the plaque was the Vilnius city, now it is not the Vilnius city, but private individuals who are owners of the plaque. But nevertheless, the private individuals who are owners of the new plaque, they have got an authorization by the Vilnius city to have this plaque.
Gotcha.
So according to them, right now, it is not the Vilnius city who is responsible. But since the Vilnius city issued the authorization, then according to me, it is still the action of the government.
Now, when you were actually in prison, what did they specifically charge you for? Were they just trying to charge you for destruction of property, but trying to prosecute you to the utmost extent possible? And then why did they release you in the first place?
They released me. Yes, of course, they charged me with the destruction of public property in a place of public glorification. So the monument is a place of public glorification. So it is a circumstance that, you know, hardens the crime. They released me because according to the Lithuanian law, there is no possibility to imprison a person who has committed a crime, a minor crime, for the first time. That's my case. And who has, decent education. So they mean PhD. So according to the law, there was no possibility to imprison me. And actually, the prosecutor did not ask to imprison me. The prosecutor was asking just to impose me a fine. And it was the judge who decided to imprison me instead of imposing the fine. So the judge was much more radical than the prosecutor. And the prosecutor did not expect that I would be imprisoned. Therefore, they released me.
I just wanted to kind of talk again about how fascinating a story that is to me. I mean, I know how scary it was when I first sent my money to a private wallet off an exchange. You just feel like you're sending money into space and you're never going to get it back. because it's different. It's very different working with cryptocurrency versus working with like a checking account, you know? Yes. So just to imagine like how scary that was for me, but not being under the pressure like you are under, having a few days to think about it, you know, meanwhile, you're thinking to yourself, I've got to send this money to space. I've got to protect my assets or it's gone. Like that to me is just, that's fascinating. So I just think it's interesting, like how quickly you would have had to adapt and learn cryptocurrency, right? And then now it's a couple years later and you're releasing an NFT. So maybe just if you could break down just a little bit more, just that transition, how you got into Bitcoin and Ethereum, and maybe what brought you to seeing NFTs as maybe not just the next best thing, but also as a way to showcase an important moment in time, because that's really what an NFT is. People get confused about it. They see CryptoPunks or they see these different projects. And if you just look at it and just see it as a JPEG or a video or whatever, that you could be technically replicated, you kind of miss the point. You miss the fact that this is capturing a moment in time. And just the ways that can be used and what that can mean, it's transformative. So just, I guess if you could share a little bit more with me about how you went from Bitcoin and Ethereum to NFTs and maybe what part, what role NFTs will play going forward in your future art or how much you believe in them, I guess.
Well, as I told you, it was extremely scary in the future because, but you know, for me, it was better to burn the money than to give them to the Nazis for the monument of the Nazis. So, you know, I would prefer to burn them. And then, you know, sending that to a wallet was better than burning. So in any way, it was stressful because, you know, immediately after my investment, Bitcoin started to fall. And it continued. But still, you know, I had no choice. So, you know, I kept it. And then, you know, I have got a lot of confidence in cryptocurrencies when I spent several months in the wallets, in different wallets. So I am extremely positive about their future. And then the NFT is, it's an amazing thing. It is actually a thing that, you know, allows you to take a piece of art that has no physical existence. Like, you know, if you take a piece of Van Gogh or, you know, Picasso, it is something that you can touch. But then for the things that you cannot touch, it is absolutely the best thing that could be created. So I was very optimistic about, you know, those that project. I felt something, you know, what many people feel about those childish pictures. You know, many people say that this is something that does not look serious. And perhaps there could be more social impact of those things. Now, I understand the value of CryptoPunks. They are, you know, 10,000. And then their uniqueness, their, you know, their place in history. Then after CryptoPunks, we have seen a huge inflation of different pictures that look like CryptoPunks. And now I would say that many people, they became critical about that inflation. So I guess that I have created my NFT at the point when, you know, it was, you know, the inflation was rising. So yeah, I believe that it is another, you know, direction in crypto art, in NFT art, and a direction that says that, you know, perhaps we could have something more challenging to the society, to the values of a particular society, small society like Lithuania. But then, you know, it gives the opportunity to many activists, social activists, political activists, human rights activists around the world to do something, you know, defending human rights and challenging in their society. I have got, you know, some feedback that, you know, now Nazis can build a monument and put an NFT like showing how they build their monuments. But you know, these things exist with CryptoPunks. There are Nazi CryptoPunks on blockchain. So, you know.
Yeah, there was a project that came out that kind of drew some controversy. It was called Slave Finance, and it was on Binance Smart Chain. And I remember it started kind of a debate because it was basically that, you know, where do you draw the line? It's decentralized, yeah. So whose obligation is it to be outraged? You know, since it's decentralized, technically somebody can create whatever platform they want. But, you know, in my view, this is how I differentiate it. And it could be different for you. It could be different for anybody. But in my view, I don't have to go walk to the library and walk by a Nazi statue every day or a Nazi NFT, right? A Nazi NFT could exist somewhere in crypto space. And I can choose not to buy it, not to participate in it, not to look at it, whatever, you know?
Yeah,
And that's a choice, a free right that I have, but I don't have that right if I'm walking down the street and I have to acknowledge that there's this person being worshipped or adored to some degree who is against my existence to some degree, which is where I think the difference is. But I guess everybody just has to, you know, you just draw that line where it makes sense to you. But I think that blockchain and DeFi is giving people the autonomy to make those decisions themselves. And I don't know, for me, that's where I think the biggest difference is.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly.
I had a question that actually just occurred to me. So recently in our previous episode that we filmed, we were speaking with Farmer Brown, and one of the topics that came up was unintended consequences of our decisions. So do you think that releasing a video like this as an NFT might encourage other people to just destroy property and create NFTs from that? Kind of like a viral video can create the sensation of people just doing something to have their 15 minutes of fame. Do you think that's a possibility? And if so, what are your views on that?
Well, you cannot actually prevent people from doing stupid things. You know, of course, you know, some people could do that, but you know, that's what you cannot prevent. I am quite happy that the first, because, you know, Investing.com writes that it's the first political video in a form of NFT. So the first one was anti-Nazi and anti-Holocaust. Then, you know, this is technology, and technology is neutral. It is just, you know, a technology. So whoever can take and use it. But I would rather feel that much more people would be inspired by this video to do things that are good, like, you know, destroying more Nazi monuments, like protesting against oppression. I think that in general, human beings are more oriented to doing positive things, to fight, you know, oppression and etc. So in general, I have confidence in the development of our culture. And I believe that perhaps other people could try do the same thing, but I believe that those things that other people will do will be positive rather than negative.
Now, do you think it's a good idea to really venerate anyone with a statue or a monument to basically create some kind of idol for them? Do you think that's a good idea in general? Does it have its place? Or do you think it's like kind of a bad idea just in the fact that we're all very fallible people, especially throughout time? You know, everyone has their positives and their negatives ultimately. So do you think it's a good idea to do that? Or do you think it will always end in some kind of tragedy in some way?
If you take the Nazis, I don't find anything positive in their activity. So if you take this Noreika, for instance, you know, he murdered over 14,000 Jews because they were Jews and, you know, not sufficiently white. Then he sold their property. He applied for a death camp. And then the only positive thing that he has done is that he was trying to organize terrorist attacks during the Soviet rule. So a terrorist attack, yes, of course, it is directed against the Soviet rule, but still I would never, you know, justify, you know, murdering ordinary people walking in the street because you protest against the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. Those people, they are they are not guilty in anything. So I do not see anything positive in the activity of the Nazis. So if other people in Lithuania or in other, you know, less developed countries like Lithuania start to destroy the monuments of the Nazis, I think this is a positive thing for the society. Because look, Adolf Hitler won democratic elections. This is very important. What we have to understand, Adolf Hitler, he was not a dictator. He came as a democratic leader of Germany. Then, you know, Stalin is also, he is not the best guy, but still, you know, if Stalin stands for elections in 2021 in Lithuania, and he presents himself as a Lithuanian, he might win democratic elections. So, you know, this is how this is a weakness in the functioning of democracy. And when people start to organize the protests like me, I think this contributes to changing the culture, because, you know, the democratic mechanisms themselves, they do not protect us against Hitler. They do not protect us from Stalin or Hitler. It is the culture that protects us. And then when you do something cultural like this, you transform this undemocratic culture. You make this culture more positive. You know, you bring something positive into that culture. So that's why, you know, I would actually encourage people to organize, you know, protests against those Nazi monuments. And then, of course, you know, it could be extended to other areas of our life. But if you take Lithuania, for instance, as I told you, certain Jewish activists were litigating for over 10 years. And they lost all the court proceedings in Lithuania. So there is no hope for justice in a country like Lithuania. And as I told, I am the fifth person who is imprisoned for criticizing Holocaust. So, you know, there is no escape. In countries like America, perhaps you have more legal remedies, you know, to face injustice.
It's kind of tough too, because I feel like we, as Americans, we tend to conflate issues, whereas we could sit down and we could have a rational discussion about, like, come on, man, this is a Nazi plaque. I mean, it has no reason being up, you know, like, it's just obvious, right? But when people make it all political, it starts becoming about other things, you know. For example, you know, I brought up cancel culture earlier, you know, and we're very about our idols in America. And so take John Wayne, for instance. You know, people really like John Wayne, a classic cowboy gentleman type. Well, apparently he was racist or something. It's like people are saying, are we supposed to cancel John Wayne now? And it becomes this conflated issue where people are saying, well, if we take down a Southern monument, then we're going to have to take down John Wayne. And it's like, that's not what we're talking about here. You know, it becomes this bizarre, blurred discussion where we're kind of forgetting that there's a loss of liberty happening right there. And it doesn't have to be solved by the state either. As you said, democracy was responsible for bringing about Adolf Hitler. This isn't about asking the state to come in. It's about the culture. It's about the people coming up and saying, this is wrong and we shouldn't be defending it and letting it stand. So I just think that that's awesome that you had the courage to do that, because I can't imagine like what that must be like. I mean, probably if you got the wrong officers, maybe that story would have went completely different. You know, who knows?
Definitely.
So back to the NFT, on OpenSea, you said that the funds that are going to be generated from the NFT sale are going to be invested into a commemoration of the victims of the Holocaust. So do you have a particular charity in mind or a way of memorializing the victims that you're considering?
Yes, you know, there are so many graves of, you know, Jews who were killed by the Nazis in Lithuania. So there is such a huge area where you can, you know, put something. Well, of course, you know, I understand that Nazis could go to the graves and, you know, do their things, but Nazis were always, well, neo-Nazis, they were always a danger to Jewish graves. So this is an issue that, you know, we need to think how to solve, because, you know, actually the police will never protect the Jewish graves. And if you put a monument at a place where, you know, thousands of Jews were killed, then the next day, you know, then the neo-Nazis will come and destroy everything, and you cannot actually. Yes, this is a challenge. This is a challenge, and I'm thinking what to do, how to solve this. I'm discussing this with my friends, and, you know, we will find something, some kind of solution to this problem. It is an open question. It is an open question. You know, we have, there are so many graffitis in Lithuania that say murder Jews, for instance. They write it on the walls in the city center, and the police is not doing anything. So obviously we need to face somehow this problem. Right now, I do not have a clear solution, because, you know, if there is no support from the police, then yes, it is an open question how to approach this commemoration.
I assume, because you've been talking about crypto banks, are you referring to various decentralized platforms and protocols that you've been involved in? Like, are you using those specifically, or do you just usually hold your crypto?
I'm holding in different wallets. I use staking. I'm constantly searching for new opportunities to invest in altcoins. This is something very interesting.
Mm-hmm. And that was actually going to be a secondary question too. So, with you saying that you've been involved with various altcoins, do you have any favorites right now, or any that you would recommend for people to look into? And if so, why do you believe in those, or think that they have some potential?
Well, of course, there is a huge potential. You know, the capitalization of the altcoins is growing, but I wouldn't, feel myself comfortable to, play a role of an expert in this area. I have some conclusions for myself, and I take myself the responsibility and all the risk. That there are much more people who are, more profound in this area. I am very enthusiastic about all the platforms that allow to link your wallet to a Visa card or MasterCard, because this is actually the main obstacle that I faced after, opening the wallets, that I cannot pay in a restaurant with a cryptocurrency. And now all those opportunities to have a bank, to have a wallet, linked to a card, that's amazing. And, there are already solutions. And, this is something that, definitely, in my opinion, should take all the market. At a certain point, everyone will be using crypto coins, cryptocurrencies, and paying for their stuff in a supermarket.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of MCO card. I don't know which one you're specifically using, but they're with crypto.com. And they're pretty neat. You can transfer Ethereum there and convert it to USD. The card doesn't work perfectly 100% of the time, but it's kind of like, you got to support crypto, you got to support these emerging technologies so they can get better. I've enjoyed using it once I got used to some of the nuances of it. And I've also kind of loved some of the different DeFi protocols out there, allowing you to earn interest or rewards on your holdings of Bitcoin or Ethereum. I'm particularly fond of Badger for Bitcoin and Shared Stake for Ethereum, earning rewards on those. But I always love to hear about what solutions other people are using. And definitely your opinion is valuable, because you've come to these choices that you've made in a situation where you absolutely had to make the right ones. So I definitely think that's excellent. I'm happy to hear that it's brought you some success as well.
Well, there is a danger at a certain stage, the governments will start to look for, you know, a possibility to arrest MasterCard or a Visa card that is, you know, linked to those wallets. But I think there will be another solution to protect
the assets. You can also limit, you know, how often you're putting funds on the card, keep it in your private wallet till you're ready to use it. So, you know, there's ways around that, fortunately.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
I think that ultimately, if they're going to try and control this kind of stuff, it's going to be a losing battle, because, you know, it kind of comes back to me with progressivism.
Yeah,
I feel that, you know, we're on a trajectory to consistently progress with our ideas and with technology. And it's usually a losing battle when you're fighting progress.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, so it's, you know, best for them to get involved in a positive way, because otherwise they're just going to be fighting it all the time. And it's not to say that they won't, because, you know, I would reference something like the drug war when it comes to something like that, where they've been attempting to limit freedom for well over 100 years in that regard, and are still fighting it to this day, even though with cannabis, for instance, the, you know, well over half the country at this point is in support of it. And they're still just dragging themselves and grasping to the past as much as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, of course. Of course. Well, you know, they have, created the system in the European Union when a decision in Lithuania automatically arrests your bank account in Portugal, which is, you know, 2,000 kilometers from over there, and they immediately arrest your bank accounts in all possible banks. So that's their dream, and now cryptocurrency, you know, destroys this dream. And this is funny to observe, and it is a wonderful thing, you know. If you do not want to be involved with that government to participate in their things, like, you know, glorification of Nazis and many other things, you know, you should have a possibility to escape the system.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I had one final question, and it's just around those initial days when you were first investing in Ethereum and Bitcoin. I'm not sure how big the stablecoin market was back then. I'm still relatively new, but would you say that you learned to embrace stablecoins at all during those dip periods, or was that a big part of your trading strategy at all?
I was actually waiting for a stablecoin, looking for stablecoins before that happened. The smashing the plaque and the judgment. But then at that point, I didn't have enough information about stable coins. So I invested everything in Bitcoin and other altcoins. And right now, it depends on your perception of risk. I would say that, you know, stablecoin is something less risky, and the staking interest is higher. But having regard to all the history of Bitcoin and Ethereum and other crypto coins, it looks for me that it is wiser to keep everything, you know, in altcoins, not in stable coins. Right now, I don't have any stable coin because I have learned about it too late, I would say.
Well, it probably worked out for the better, because when you think about it, you know, you could have came into that situation and immediately switched to stable coins and you'd have what you had back then. But because you lost a little bit and took that chance, it ended up working out. Now you're ahead. So I guess historically, if you're going to be in long term, it's definitely like Bitcoin and ETH. I mean, of course, not financial advice, but, you know, that seems to be the place to go.
Yes, exactly. If at the day of the judgment, when I was ordered to cover the price of the monument and the new monument, I would rather invest in stablecoin, but I did not have that information. So finally, it you know, it is a serendipity. You know, it is something that occurs like a miracle, like You know, you don't know what is happening, but finally it is amazing.
Well, my last question is, do you have any social media channels or anything like that where people can follow you? Do you use Twitter? Are you on crypto Twitter?
I am on Facebook. Right now I don't have a crypto Twitter, but I should do that.
It's, you know, it's a great place. It's a much more enjoyable place to be in than Facebook. It's
okay.
If you stay in crypto Twitter, it's a very positive place. Lots of learning opportunities, a lot of good people.
Okay. Okay. I'll Google that. I never used crypto Twitter. I know classical Twitter, and I have an account there.
It's just a reference to like the crypto and DeFi community within Twitter.
Yeah, it's like a main street of crypto where everybody just follows each other on Twitter. But it's a good place to be to kind of keep up to date on what's going on with different protocols and projects. So yeah, definitely if you ever want to get introduced to the space, let me know. And we'll definitely be staying in contact because I want to hear you win this case. I'm excited about it. It's a great story. And we've appreciated you sharing it with us as well.
Do you have anything else to say about the NFT or how people can find that? Any other ideas about NFTs in the future that you plan to be involved in? Anything like that?
You know, my NFT, which is called Destruction of a Nazi Monument, is on OpenSea, and you know, it is easy to find. And then obviously if this work if this works, then I will create more NFTs like that, actually. But I'm sure that, you know, there will be people in Lithuania who will continue this kind of performance art in the future, even if I am not able to come back to Lithuania. And of course, this is an amazing sector, and I will be following, you know, the news on NFTs and the tendencies, and you know, there are so many things to learn. There is something new coming every day, so it is very interesting. Yes.
And that actually brought up two more questions for me. So one of them I wanted to ask was, you had someone filming you the whole time. Was there any consequences for them when this happened?
Yes. The prosecution tried to prosecute those people who were filming, but finally they became witnesses because, you know, they have explained that they did not. They had not known what I was going to do, that they were just filming without understanding what was happening. So they escaped any sanction.
Gotcha. And then, yeah, my final one was, how would you feel if somebody purchased it, possibly someone from Lithuania who disagrees with you or dislikes you a lot and burns the NFT? What would that make you feel like?
that would be an interesting development, but I don't think it is possible. You know, those neo-Nazis, they usually they do not speak foreign languages. They are too stupid to organize something like that. I wouldn't believe that it would be possible.
Plus, you have to pay for the privilege, right? So there's that at least.
Like there are some people who've, you know, purchased CryptoPunks and burned those. And
I think that was
things like that.
Yeah, I know Binance, they had a Binance variant called Bunks.
I could see that.
Yeah, yep. Somebody was going around purchasing all the Binance punks and burning them. Who knows? Either they didn't like them, or maybe they were just trying to make theirs more special by burning all the others. I don't know. But again, if at least what's nice about this NFT art is, even if that is someone's intention, if you create the art with you create the art with the right tag, I mean, at least they have to pay for that privilege. So they're that at the very least. But I'd love to see this change hands quite a bit in the crypto community and get a lot of attention, because I think Nazis are bad, and I think we should do everything we can to support people who are against them. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Well, yeah, I really, really appreciate you coming on. This has been a lot of fun. Definitely learned a whole bunch.
Okay, great. Wonderful. Thanks. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. And if you do get on Twitter, please let us know, because we've got a couple things on there. We'd love to connect with you on there as well.
Yeah, sure. Definitely. I'll do that.
Awesome. All right. That. Well, thank you again. Great. You have a good day.
Take care.
Thanks. Yeah. Bye-bye.